to open the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee of November 3rd, 2022, and ask the clerk to please take the roll.
Manager Green.
Present.
Gina Hansen.
Present.
Phil Erner.
Present.
Joseph Maloney.
Here.
Eric Stewart.
Present.
Everybody is present.
Thank you. Do we have a pledge? Yes. We call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And have folks had a chance to review the minutes from the previous meeting? Okay. Do you want to? We come back to that. We can do a report and come back to that. Why don't we do that just to be sure everyone's comfortable with it? And with that, I would like to ask Director Vazda from the Department of Environment. I think we want to start with a budget overview.
Yes.
And everyone should have a copy or have it on your I do not have a copy. And I've looked it over, so if somebody would like to look at this copy.
Oh, thanks.
Good. Okay.
I have some handouts. I don't have enough for everybody who's here, but the committee members.
You can make your copy and I'll.
Thank you.
Do you have enough for the members?
Yeah.
Okay, I can.
All right. There's six more copies there.
We can check.
Okay. Did you get one for the record?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So what's handed out is an overview summarizing some of the budget highlights for the Department of the Environment, and I'll go through page by page, and please stop me as we go along if you have any questions. So total revenues for the Department of the Environment, $269,809 for 2023, and our total expenditures is $937,351. And that includes employee benefits costs in the total expenses. Page two shows one of the ways we look at our budget for operating budget for the Department of Environment is by program areas. So we have it broken down into six program areas: administration, climate mitigation, green economy, materials management, natural resources, and resilience. Those, all of the activities and costs we can group into those. So that includes personnel costs as well as contractual costs, professional services, other things. At the bottom of page two is a summary of our administrative costs. So you can see the theme here is that most of the budget is going towards personnel costs for our staff of six. This is support for the department. So all payroll, all budgeting, all procurement contracts, compliance with SOPs, and any other department functions are included under this category. We also provide support for the Environmental Management Council, which is included here, and then some internship work and website and grant writing. Going to the top of the next page, under climate mitigation, we have programs for energy efficiency work in buildings, the Green Fleet, the Government Operations Climate Action Plan, community climate action planning efforts, and other clean energy projects. As identified. expenses here, $192,339. And a good amount of this area is contractual costs. I have some of the activities listed there that we're pursuing this year. Under green economy, this primarily supports the Green Economy Network in partnership with the Office of Economic Development and the Green Business Champions Program, which is also housed at Economic Development, but overseen partially through the Department of the Environment. And another initiative that we'll be supporting this year is Green Careers Academy work, providing internships for students who are pursuing environmental career paths. On the next page, under materials management, this area covers a good amount of work that is directed towards meeting the requirements of local laws and resolutions around materials management. So in the past, it has been the Bring Your Own Bag Act. The Skip the Straw Act is currently something that we conduct outreach for. And then a large part of the work is the Food Waste Prevention and Recovery Act. Now we're doing education and outreach and implementation of that law. There are also several Climate Smart Communities actions that are included under materials management that we oversee for the county through our Climate Smart Communities program work. And work on the Reuse Innovation Center feasibility study, the capital project, falls into this category as well. Under the next section, natural resources, this covers anything that falls under the category of natural resources, but primarily regulatory requirements under the MS4 stormwater program for the county, water quality work under as the county's water quality management agency, and a project that we're pursuing this year for the natural resources inventory for Ulster County. And the last of the program areas is climate resilience. This work area has one staff member who's dedicated full-time through a contract with Cornell Cooperative Extension as a flood hazard mitigation planner. That role's work is primarily in the Ashokan watershed, but the purpose of the position is to provide linkages across the county when it comes to resilience and flood mitigation planning. And then we have a climate adaptation plan project that we are completing in 2023, as well as several Climate Smart Communities actions that fall under the climate resilience heading. Last slide here is an organizational overview. I mentioned we have six staff members, and this shows the layout. That, any questions?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, please. Thank you, Director Vazda. are these, I'm having trouble distinguishing the colors on these pies. I know in the first one, administration, you said about the largest chunk was for personnel. Is that the darkest color I'm seeing on the rest of the rest of the pies that are 47, for example, on climate, mm-hmm. and 63 on green con?
Yeah, the dark blue color indicates personnel.
Okay.
And costs. Yeah.
Thank you.
Is any of this capital or is it all operating?
This is all operating.
Okay. Is there any capital?
We have four capital projects that we're supporting. The Reuse Innovation Center project is one. A lighting retrofit at the social services building, the office complex, rooftop solar project at the bus garage,
yes.
And fourth is EV charging station support for fleet vehicles. So personnel time that is budgeted in our operating budget goes to support those projects as well.
And along those lines, I know we don't have a crystal ball on the feasibility study for the Reuse Intervention Center, but at some point, that should go into the capital plan. There should be an amendment to put that in the capital plan.
So the feasibility study project is in the plan?
Yes. No, the feasibility study is.
Okay.
But it's a feasibility to develop a project, to develop an actual facility. So when that crystal ball starts to become clear, because a lot of times we do put placeholders in the capital improvement budget, and I asked about that, and administration is clear, because now I've asked twice, because I forgot I had already asked. But just, you know, at some point there should be funding allocated for that. Because it's a 5-year plan. Any other questions? Go ahead. Go for it.
I mean, I think now is the time to ask certain questions when we're going over the budget and what your plans are for the next year. I was just wondering something I've talked to Phil about quite a bit. We have a lot of environmental concerns around the county. Looking at the administrative code, it certainly would be within your jurisdiction to get involved in some of these things, but why hasn't our environment department gotten more involved in turbidity in the Esopus? I mean, you're allowed to be the liaison and work with state and federal agencies, even private environmental groups. It's one of the single biggest environmental issues going right now, and I feel like our entire county population has been left out to dry. And why wouldn't our county get behind what's going on there and insert ourselves as opposed to not doing anything?
I'll say a few things, and then I can turn it over to Dennis, but we've had a long history of engagement on the issues about turbidity in the Lower Esopus. And a lot of that was done by my predecessor, Amanda Lovato, who's now at the Planning Department. So currently...
what did she do?
Mainly participation in a group called the Shokan Releases Working Group, which is a technical liaison to the DEP to work on issues that were...
It's an extension of the DEP, or...?
No, it's a... it's a working group where there are members from the DEP and from the county and community stakeholders who are...
Well, the DEP is doing this. I'm not sure they're real motivated to be part of the process to fix this, but... so it's not much. We haven't done much, though, if that's all we've done.
We went through last year when the comment period was open for the draft environmental impact statement for the Cat Alum permit. Approval process. We led a comment group of stakeholders who provided comments on that.
In that forum?
In that forum.
And who put that forum on?
So the
who
comments that we.
Who hosted the forum?
Who hosted the forum? We led the discussion of the forum from the department.
We hosted. You hosted the forum?
So the forum was the Ashokan Releases Working Group, but we submitted the comments on behalf of the Ashokan Releases Working Group.
See, I see things on the front page of the paper and press releases every day come out of our county,
right.
And I think it would be wonderful to see our county come out with statements in the media. I mean, nothing moves the wheels of justice like public outcry,
right.
And I know this may not be your decision, and you work under people, and you may like to do more. But I'd like to see us do more, and I think if the county got involved, and I don't know who's going to speak for our residents if we don't. No other county cares about what's happening to the Lower Esopus but us,
mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see it, I mean, be part of the plan for this year to get very involved on behalf of the residents of this county, not just the ones living there. We're all being affected by it, but, you know, and there's... concerns over with Glenary Boulevard, with runoff, some of it into the Esopus. There's complaints of the few people that have wells over there being contaminated. There was quite a bit of clear cutting. Golden Hill, a property we own. I just think that we should be more involved I'd like to see our Department of Environment be more involved in constituent complaints and concerns and requests and questions with regards to environmental things happening in their own backyards, and it's just nothing that I see our department do much of. And I don't know how to pivot and get us doing a little more of that, but I think we need to, especially with the turbidity.
I was just going to add that I've attended some of those Ashokan Release working meetings. There's one during the pandemic that there's probably 100 people in on the Zoom meeting. It was a very large group of people. And the it wasn't the way a lot of the information presented was extremely technical. At least I found it so, and I thought it was kind of difficult to follow for someone who does not have a scientific or engineering background. That said, I thought it was, you know, a valuable thing, and like I say, it was very well attended. There is a discussion going on currently about naming a representative of the legislature to the Ashokan Release Working Group. We have been discussing that within our group, and I said that I would be willing to take on that responsibility or perhaps share it with other legislators if they want to have like a rotating, you know, thing. So that's something that's on our radar. So just FYI.
The other part that's happening is there's a stream management planning process that the planning department's leading that is funded entirely from the settlement. I'll turn over to Dennis.
Please.
Yeah, from the chair. Just to address some of those comments and I have to say this, that I would think that years of my life were lost with respect to some of the issues that were raised back in 2011 when these releases started. And they started, they called them releases back in the day. We called them, you know, it was known as the waste channel. The amount of effort that it took to essentially have a consent order, there was an order on consent that was issued by DEC with respect to those releases. And not being able to tie it to something called the Clean Water Act because of it was down dam. The DEC was essentially tied it to a Cat Alum permit, which was alum releases in the reservoir at Kensico. And we've been involved in that discussion. And I mean we as a county as a whole. Both the legislature issued resolutions. The county executive fought, a heroic battle to get us to where we were. We actually had a working group. And we actually developed something called an interim release protocol, which we had no protocol. There was essentially release when you want to, and call us if you think you have to. And now we're at a situation where we're 11 years into, or 5 years, I can't remember even the numbers anymore. We're a long ways. I think it's close to 11 years into a draft environmental impact statement with respect to what the impacts are of these turbid releases. And now the discussions have gotten extremely technical with respect to what the models show versus how many of the releases are there, what alternatives are available. And we've raised questions because we had that order and consent. We actually had money that was given to us to essentially participate in the review of that impact statement. And so we reviewed the scope of that impact statement, provided comments on that scope. We reviewed the impact statement itself, provided comments on the impact statement itself. And as part of those comments and as part of the diligence, in terms of trying to make sure that the agencies that were involved in the permitting process were doing their job, the department has now indicated that they're going to issue a supplemental impact statement, a supplemental requirement, particularly as it relates to impacts on the Hudson River and something called the Hudson.
What department is that?
DEC is the
DEC. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're going to issue, they've required a supplemental. The city of New York, in terms of its ability to react, basically is telling us that a supplemental impact statement will take another 5 years. So now there's discussions with respect to what happens to that interim release protocol, which is out there now, which contains essentially a water quality issue relative to preserving the city of New York's water quality, and something called an operational release as it relates to flooding downstream. So now that they're taking a look at that and see if the interim release protocol is part of the order on consent. And so now they're taking a look at that and they're trying to see whether or not it's amendable. They're taking a look to see whether it needs to be amended. And I suspect that we have a meeting coming up in December. I suspect that there will be significant discussions on what happens to that interim release protocol. And there are ongoing discussions back behind between DEC and DEP about amending this release protocol.
Was there talk about giving the county a bigger ability to?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if they could. They'd have to listen, but they'd like us to say it's not a problem. But if we did, they still don't have to necessarily listen to us. Can you explain that real quick?
The conversation now is the releases as they are standard now are standardized, and there are certain things that they have to do if their turbidity goes over, say, 30 NTUs, and then it basically requires them to release clear water for a certain amount of time, and then when they can continue to release turbid water. We call it rinse, flush, and repeat, that kind of stuff. It is of no use to the people on the lower surface. The proposed, and I believe it's now public, the proposed changes to the IRP would be effectively saying that the city of New York now believes it doesn't have to make releases at all for flood control purposes. So what that means is that if you want a release on the lower Esopus for flood control purposes, someone else is going to call for it. And so you may find yourself in a situation where the releases to the lower Esopus are being asked for by an entity within the county. And then the response would be, as long as it doesn't affect the operational water supply of the city of New York, they will make those releases.
So they're saying they don't need to make releases?
What they're saying is that their ability to control turbidity and use their water supply is no longer as dependent as they thought it was on making releases to the lower Esopus.
What are they going to do with the sediment in the West Basin?
They're going to let you make the releases. Mm-hmm. They're going to basically say if the communities on the lower Esopus want releases to avoid flooding, you can call for them. How's that?
And you being the legislature,
you being some entity would call for it.
They might even give it to different municipalities along the
way. I would tend to think that given the fact that there's multiple municipalities, I tend to think that what's going to happen here is that they're going to approach someone like the county's emergency management services and say, if you want releases, you can call for them. We think that there are some significant concerns that need to be raised by that, as do others, by the way.
If we never called for it? What would happen to them?
They
have a sediment issue.
They claim that their ability. Let me just put it this way: what they've said is that they don't believe that they have to make the releases that they're currently being. That they're currently making it with respect to maintain a what they call a conditional storage objective, a CSSO. They're saying that they don't have to make those releases, which basically says it goes down to 80%, comes up to 100% in June, and then they draw it down during the summer months, and then come September, October, that it's allowed to go up again. That's what they're saying. I can't tell you whether that's true or not. All I can tell you is that when we look at the interim release protocol that is being proposed as amended, it would essentially say that if you want releases to deal with flooding situations on the lower Esopus, an entity besides DEP or DEC is going to call for them. As it stands now, the county and others can request releases above and beyond what is currently being done. This would basically put the onus on that request rather than the decision on that request back at a different level on a different party rather than the two parties that are involved now. So the concern that we've expressed is that we believe that either the regulatory agency, which is DEP, or the entity that owns the dam and the water, which is DEC, should continue to have that essentially responsibility.
Thank you. And the releases would, in theory, be asked for before big storms?
Of course. And you would look at what they call the NOAA effort. We would look at the NOAA. And I'm taking up too much of your time, Chair.
But I appreciate it. And maybe we could get the lower SOPIS and the turbidity maybe on every agenda and keep us up on that. And maybe we can, and that'll keep us continuing to figure out how the county can get a little more involved.
I see a lot of nodding support.
And I can tell you that the County Planning Board has submitted comments relative to the draft environmental impact statement and others. And we would intend to submit comments on the IRP if the county doesn't submit comments. I will go to my board and ask the board to submit.
Excellent.
I want to hear from Attorney Gordon, and then I have a comment, and then we have to move on.
Yeah, I'll try to be very, very brief. I just wanted to answer some of Joe's points relating to this process. And I want to say at the outset, during this, especially during last year when some of these comments went in, I was not working with the legislature at the time, and I was representing Catskill Mountain Keeper on this project, and we submitted comments on this project in this process. I just want to explain that a little bit because I think it was where you were going, and then we can get back into what's going on now. There was a comment period that was being run by DEC, essentially. DEC and DEP were jointly running it because there were two regulatory things happening on this. One was, as Dennis pointed out, under SEAKER, there was an environmental impact statement which was being commented on. And that's what everybody was focusing on, was the comments on the EIS. It wasn't good enough because it wasn't going to stop this thing that nobody liked. And all the environmental groups and the county, I believe, Mando, were working on comments on this. The thing to know about, though, is that SEAKER comments have very, very little legal hook to them. Unless there's some illegality, it's your opinion versus their opinion as to what's good or bad. And under SEAKER, you really only need to do is an environmental impact statement and respond to the comments. After that, it's very, very hard to, let's say, for example, sue to enforce your position.
Doesn't the DEC have standing law that says you can't change the color of water?
Well, you just jumped ahead of me. What we did, my partner and I, and you know, we have some training in the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act also governs the situation in addition to SEAKER, because that's the law under which the Speedies permit is granted. And this was relating to some Speedies permits, a complicated Speedies permit, because it involved sending the water down to the Kensico, which is where the Ashoka is going, and that, you know, there's a bunch of things in it. But what we did was, instead of just relying on essentially complaining under SEAKER that the EIS isn't good enough because you're still making the water dirty, and these are all just nice words, we fired up the Clean Water Act. Again, everything I'm telling you is from the perspective of having represented Mountain Keeper on this and for informational purposes, okay? If you need other counsel on this, if that's where you want to go. But what we said was, basically, you're violating the Clean Water Act. This Speedies permit is illegal for exactly the reason you said. You're violating water quality standards, which are a Clean Water Act thing. Therefore, if you continue to do this, i.e. renew the Speedies permit, you are subject to essentially a legal action, and the legal action we're talking about under the DEC regulations would be dragging DEC into an administrative hearing.
But it'd be in New York City, wouldn't it?
The physical location?
Yeah.
No. It's a Region 3 Speedies permit, or it's a Speedies permit coming out of Albany, so it's wherever they would send a ALJ, administrative law judge, to hold the hearing in a good location. My guess is it would have been here. But the point is, there would be a hearing that anybody could basically sign up to be a party in, but it's a trial-like hearing at that point. Basically, you send your witnesses to say why this is consistent with the law, we'll send our witnesses to say why it's not, and we'll go for it. And then, if depending on the outcome of that hearing, somebody could sue, but that's basically the best you can do. But the point is, we, in our comments, we specifically threatened the legal process on that basis and explained the technical reason why, because you're making the water dirty. It was my impression at the time that was the most aggressive comment that was coming out of the entire community, which included many environmental groups as well as the county and maybe some towns. I was hopeful at the time that we would get other folks to sign on to it. And for one reason, because everybody knew about it, and for a variety of different reasons, I don't think anybody ever signed on. But the good news is that after X number of months, it looks like the agency's pulled back. There were three types of releases that were authorized under these permits. One was actually for the good of the community. We're just going to make sure that there's water in the lower Esopus. Those were called, I think...
Conservation
releases. One was releases for flooding, which is what's left. And I don't know whether those are good or bad, but the third one was what's called operational releases. Those were the bad ones. Those are the ones where we're only doing... This is not flooding. This is we're sending goop down the Esopus because we don't want it in the Ashokan. That is what has been, to the best of my knowledge, suspended in the most recent proposal. Oh, I should back up and say, after these comments came in, the first regulatory response was that they said, we're going to do a supplemental EIS, we're pulling this off the table, we realize maybe we need to do a few more things. Okay, that's a good start. Now they've come in with a substantive proposal to pull out the operational releases, which is the mud going down to your constituents. So. Dennis is now we need to know technically what does this mean, and I haven't begun to crunch it, I'll tell you that right now, but the question is now do we have a better technical result than we did last year? And the answer is we may well have. The price seems to be, though, that there's also apparently some other burden coming to Ulster County, and frankly, Joe, I haven't looked at it, so I don't know, but I'm just setting up where things were at. But the answer to your question was, We thought we might have had a stronger case if other folks had signed on and said, yeah, we're gonna drag you before an administrator, we're gonna sign on to the ALJ thing. We didn't, but the entirety of the comments moved the ball anyway.
Can the county legislature or the executive himself or herself just decide to go after litigation and a lawsuit ourselves on behalf of?
What I would say is if the county wants to litigate affirmatively, including, I would say, going to essentially file a petition to drag the city in it's a quasi lawsuit. I mean, so I would say get legislative approval on that. If the executive wants to do that, bring it before the legislature, get approval, and then send the troops after him.
All right.
Legislator Erner's hand, and then I had a question after, and then I really do want to move on to a very long agenda. No, this is important, and it's kind of been behind the scenes from our perspective, so we're kind of just getting caught up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to get back to Director Vazda. Did you not get anything that you wanted from the executive? What else?
He's not here.
Thinking about how to answer that. So, everything we requested was included in the budget.
Okay. Yeah. Quick follow-up. We've talked a little bit informally, maybe I've mentioned it here, I'm not sure, but about the idea, following up with what Senator Maloney was talking about, an advocate, essentially, whether that's somebody in your office or some new position we had elsewhere, but an environmental ombudsperson or somebody whose job it is specifically to go to go fight for our people
or
on these issues.
Or to even establish a relationship with you or someone in your department, obviously we'd go through you, where we say, hey, look, we're getting these calls. This is what we're being told. Mm-hmm. And having you actually opine on what you're seeing environmentally there. I don't know, something like that. Or, you know, you going down and taking a look and giving the department's opinion. I mean, just times that could get difficult. I'm sure we could come up with some scenarios where that would be not always, sometimes very appropriate, other times maybe not, depending on the situation and who the complainant is or against and what it actually they're asking for. But there's certainly times that we've experienced that I think it would have been appropriate for the county officials to go down and have at least an opinion.
Mm-hmm. We do field a good number of public questions and concerns, you know, throughout the day. They find our number on the county's website and handle what we can with the staff that we have. Refer to the right people.
I have a question that just goes back to the releases. Do we have the technical ability, if DEP wants to, excuse my using the term, dump that responsibility on the county, do we have, the technical ability to, or would we need to contract, how would we handle that? I don't expect we'd accept the responsibility, but I just want to know the question about.
So from my perspective, the in spite of what is a complete disagreement in terms of the position of what's happening out there, there's been a substantial amount of collaboration in terms of trying to make sure that the residents below the reservoir are safe. And I think that's to be commended from all the parties that are out here. The short answer is that you can't hire the expertise of DEP, and that's what you need. Their modeling efforts, their OASIS models, their other models that are out there, and their operational way that they operate the reservoir is world class. And so when you start to think about calling for releases, you're really looking at trying to set a parameter and say, what's the operational, what's the long-term forecast show us? What's the current operations of the reservoir, and what can we do essentially to make sure that if we have a spill, it's the least amount of spill that we can get? So the short answer is that if this goes forward, I would think that it's a collaborative effort with somebody finally making the call at some level beyond DEP or DEC, which is where they want to go. But it's not something that you would want to do in a vacuum. That's just my opinion. But you're going to run into a learning curve on some of these things. In particular, if the reservoir operations change, then the learning curve becomes much more dynamic. And let me give you an example of that. When we go back and we look at it, we track every day. We get the water quality issues come in, I think, once a week, and every day that the current condition of the reservoirs comes in. And what you can see in terms of operations of the reservoir is when the reservoir turns turbid, the Catskill Aqueduct gets shut down. So there's about 350 to 580 million gallons a day that goes down the Catskill Aqueduct. They shut it down, and the reason for that is they don't want to use alum down in Kensico. They're precluded by some of the regulatory efforts of both the Department of Health and DEC. The discussion is now that they actually have other problems besides turbidity problems. And those other problems may allow them to use more turbid water and less restrictions on the use of alum. If that's the case, then we may see, instead of shutting down the reservoir coming out, we may see water to continue to be withdrawn from the reservoir. That negates the need for releases downstream on a water quality basis. And so one of the internal discussions that we're having in the office and with others is that before you say no, you may want to say, if there's a learning curve to do here and there's an operational change that can be made in the city reservoir, why not keep the IRP as it currently exists? And then just use it to essentially inform what's going to happen with operational changes in the reservoir over time, given the fact that the city is telling us and the state is telling us that there may be a different way we have to operate the reservoir because of other water quality issues. And this is public health quality issues. And I want you to think, if you think about public health quality issues.
Is that because of the aluminum sulfate? Or?
No, it has to. I want you to think about the fact that when you chlorinate water over time, as it sits, you get chlorinated byproducts that develop, and there is a public health standard for those byproducts. Mm-hmm. And the more organic compounds you have in the water, the more likely it is that those organic compounds essentially continue to accumulate in your water supply. And the city is running an issue where essentially the Delaware water has a high organic content and the Catskill water does not. So they may be balancing turbidity versus organics, where in the past the only thing they had to balance was turbidity. It's really complicated.
If they say they don't need to release the turbid water into the lower Esopus, everybody's happy.
No.
Well, I mean, the people along the Esopus.
No, let me tell you why.
All right.
Because if they don't release and they don't maintain a void in the reservoir when it storms, you get flooding.
They could still release clean water.
That's not what they're talking about.
They're holding that over our heads, is what they're saying.
No, what they're saying is that they don't have to make those operational releases to protect their water supply. What they will do is make flood mitigation releases to protect the downstream. The downstream landowners. We could talk about this. I'd be more than happy to sit down and have a sort of a kitchen table talk about this, but it is a complicated issue, and we've been engaged in it since 2011, and continue to be engaged. And we've had the help of the Department of Environment. We've also had the help of numerous Riverkeeper would be one, Mountainkeeper would be the others. All the supervisors along the lower Esopus participate, and we speak with them. And then finally the conversations with respect. I've been very fortunate to have Amanda Laval join our staff in terms of helping to inform us as well at the planning board level.
Legislator Stewart. And then
I was just going to ask. Basically, it's all of this is so the city doesn't have to spend a gazillion dollars
on
a water filtration system.
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is I think that over time the city realizes they're going to have to build a filtration system. Yeah, and before we,
and they're just dragging their feet in the decade to to avoid spending the money.
Well, I am wondering if it's worth asking if we could, not just for this committee, but for the legislature and anybody else who wants to understand this, if it would be possible to put together a presentation that summarizes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Your presentation just now has been extremely helpful, so thank you.
Yeah.
And the position papers are all, there's probably 10 of them. The position papers and operational discussions, et cetera. There's probably at least,
a current situation where they are looking to be relieved of that control over the release.
I just want to make one comment to Legislator Stewart.
Yeah.
With respect to filtration, I might suggest that we look at it as something other than the city just avoiding massive multi-billion dollar costs for this. Setting aside the money.
Right.
Back in the 90s when this was first put into place, and I was working with Riverkeeper then, filtration was seen as an environmentally positive and sound alternative. I'm sorry, filtration avoidance was seen as something not only fiscally sound but also environmentally sound, because it meant that this entire effort to preserve the watershed in something close to a clean state got done, and the money went there, as opposed to the concern was that if the money went to a filter plant, the attitude would be more like an engineering thing. Okay, we built the filter plant, who cares what happens in the Ashokan watershed?
And therefore we don't need all these acres of woodland surrounding
exactly
reservoirs.
And so right. So filtration and filtration avoidance, and the EPA work on it, and the DEP and DEC work on it, and the environment, everybody, was considered to be an environmental achievement back in the 90s. So I would just advise, in terms of the understanding whether we want to just sort of say the city's avoiding a couple billion. It was seen as a very significant achievement that's probably still paying dividends, both in terms of the environment as well as money coming up from the city for our communities to try to stay cleaner.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that when you said
thank
that,
you
it's not, there's a win for us with respect to some of the things that happen in the watershed because of
right.
the filtration
both
avoidance.
Both concrete and philosophical.
Yes,
if you feel that.
There is.
But now we're where we're at.
That was one of the best collaborative processes I ever observed, and I look for them.
I'll share with the committee, though, the County Planning Board's recent comments that we submitted.
Okay.
Yeah. On the IRP?
No, we didn't. This is on some of the other items that were of concern.
And we will keep this as an agenda item, but if, you know, let you folks figure out when a good time to kind of go over that history in an order so that we're up to speed for and ready for what might happen. Dave.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, too. And I'll make this really brief, but of course, we represent on the EMC multiple towns for which the turbidity is a problem. And last year, we sent a long letter of comment about the turbidity and the environmental concerns around that. Right now, and everything that's been said has already been said, so I'm not going to mention that, except there was a lot of concern within our council that the onus of releases was going to be placed on the county, and they were, like you said, they were not sure we had the expertise, the knowledge, and so forth to be able to handle anything like that. But two things that have not been mentioned are that on November 18th at 10 a.m., there's a public forum or seminar or something. I don't know where that is. I just have to write this down.
On
November 18th at 10 a.m. on this very topic.
I don't believe it's public, though. That's
and we're in. We're also in a comment period of time that closes January 17th, so there's a 60-day...
On this new proposal?
On this new proposal, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so we've requested, and River Creek has requested, an extension of the comment period, so that's one.
And they did.
Is November 18th a Friday?
Days.
Is that a Friday? Yeah, that's the meeting of the Ashokan Release Working Group, and that is not a public meeting. That's members of the working group that can attend.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But somebody from the county will be
can
report back.
Yeah, both Amanda and myself attend.
Okay, great. And if I may, Nick, there's one more thing on your agenda, the reuse, on our agenda that you would be able to update us on the reuse.
Reuse Innovation Center, the project kicked off earlier this month. The consultants are on staff, Sustainable Hudson Valley, and their sub-consultant, Dave Bennick. And there have been multiple early stakeholder engagement meetings that have happened, including with the Research Recovery Agency, with Greg and his staff, and other entities around the county, commercial and private, that are doing reuse type of work in the community. And the next phase is characterizing what the opportunities are in the waste stream, and then setting up a method for prioritizing those for action.
Later in the agenda is an item about the Zero Waste Implementation Plan, and what I just want to say is, as we're putting the pieces together into a table of contents, and you know, this has happened once already, there was a Zero Waste Implementation Plan, but there was criticism of it, and so we thought we could address that, and we now have a consultant working on that. But what we're finding is certain materials really seem to belong in the RIC feasibility study. So I think at some point soon we should have a meeting to see if there's alignment on it would stay in the Zero Waste Implementation Plan, but it would reference the Reuse Innovation Center. And those are things like furniture and textiles and There will be some information, but if we think that it's likely to be handled at a reuse innovation center, then it'll refer over. So I just wondered to, and that's probably all I have to do to for the ZWIP. We can check that off the agenda for tonight, because we have quite a few more other. And at this point, if there are no other questions, I'd like to welcome Greg.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
News to share. We're hosting two public workshops for the Natural Resources Inventory Mapping
yes.
Project in the coming month. The first one is on November 14th, which is Monday. It's in the evening at the Rosendale Rec Center. It's in person. And this will be a presentation from our consultant about the work that they're doing, and then a workshop to gather information about priorities in the community. The second is a remote version of the same workshop. That will be on Wednesday the 16th from 11:30 to 1 p.m. on Zoom.
And we're going to get notifications of that?
I will send, we have a website set up that has registration links for both, and I can share that with the committee.
That would be great.
Great. Thank you. And I'd like to invite Greg Olivier to give us an update on the UCR regs.
Thank you. So the NYSAR, New York State Association of Reduction and Reuse Recycling, is hosting its fall conference in Cooperstown on November 14th through the 16th. Angelina from our office has been invited to be a featured speaker on the topic of zero waste seminar project she created last summer. And you can visit their website for more on that conference if you're interested.
I didn't hear who's speaking.
Angelina.
Okay.
Angie's
great.
Going. Yeah,
thank you.
So I'm not familiar with this organization, but it looks like it's quite the honor for her to be asked to come and speak. So I'm kind of excited for her and proud of that. We're gearing up I'll back up here. So we hosted a series of fall classes in October, including the first group to visit our new home composting demonstration garden at the office. We had 65 adults and 5 youth participate in a free class last month. Year to date, 726 adults and 317 youth have participated in the classes. And as was mentioned, we hosted the kickoff meeting for Sustainable Hudson Valley and the Ulster County Department of Environment for their kickoff on the Reuse Innovation Center study. So we gave them a tour of the facility and then followed that up with a very productive meeting afterwards and stuff. So feel good that they've got a great start there. I've also spoke with Dave, their consultant, yesterday on the phone. He called and we had a pretty productive conversation. So I think things are well on their way on that project. We're gearing up for America Recycles Day. I think I started to say that before. It's celebrated nationally on November 15th. So you're going to be hearing some radio now, social media stuff, seeing that, and all month long. Last year, the agency launched a library display loan program. This year, a youth engagement program will be announced. So I'll be 100% transparent with you. I've not even been brought up to speed on that yet, so I'm interested in finding out more about that tomorrow. So an update I asked for was given. So let's see. A temporary funding source is available through New York State Department of Environmental. What does the C stand for? Conservation. Okay. Wasn't sure. I'm learning. So, and Angelina is working on a grant to partner with transfer stations and increase residential food scrap drop-off locations in the county. The goal is to get a pilot program going with 5 towns participating in it. Currently, we only have 2, but I am pedaling as fast as I can to reach out to the others and try to see if I can get more on board.
Which towns? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. We both were curious as to which towns have signed up so far.
Okay, I want to say, let me see, who was it? Because I only know who I was told to go out and talk to, because it's like, Greg, we talked to them and they haven't given us an answer. Or they said they weren't interested. Can you convince them to come on board? Was it Rochester, I think?
Yeah. Greg, why don't you find out and send
I'll double check and I'll let you know for sure.
Yeah, rather
I'm
than
right now off the top of my head.
I've been drinking from the fire hose.
Can you send an email, a brief description again?
Yes.
What it exactly is.
Yes.
And what towns are already in.
And then
fire
we
that
can
off to
out.
Mana, and then Mana, you can fire it right off to us or
and
Chelsea.
Me and Chelsea, because Chelsea is really good about.
And then we can reach out to our towns as well.
Yes, that would be great.
Right. If it sits in my pile, it might take a while.
Chelsea. And then just fire it right off to us.
I'll do that.
Thank
I'll have
you.
That done tomorrow for you.
A comment about the composting, too. Pardon my interrupting. And nice to meet you. I wasn't in person last time.
Oh, yeah, we did not meet, did we? So I owe you one of these, so. And you didn't get one either, so.
I have heard from constituents about an increased interest in composting, and I know that the RRA does advise on that, educate on that, help folks do that. I appreciate that you sell the compost for affordable also to the public. Is there any thought to expanding more aggressively, getting folks to do it at home more? I mean, I feel like I know there's companies that you can that like Community Composting in Kerhonkson that's their business. But if, I know there's issues with it coming to pick up if people don't have a. I mean, I represent part of the city of Kingston. If people don't really have a convenient place, they live in an apartment or whatnot. And it might not be that easy, but. And a lot of the county folks could do it in their backyard or find a space to do it. And I would love to not have to haul that much material around. What do you think?
From experience, and just to give you some of my background, just so you know that I came from running the largest municipally owned composting program at one time in the country, not now. Still was in the tops in the state of California. It's an all-the-above approach. You really want to encourage that backyard composting where it's applicable, where it works. And definitely in the more rural areas, that works well. But for apartment dwellers, you know, and in the city and stuff, it gets a little trickier sometimes to get, you know, the masses on board with it. And honestly, that's when you have to look at convenient, easy collection, which is not ever convenient or easy, but that's what you have to try to accomplish. And in California, they passed a major law concerning organics, and it went into effect in January, and it's mandating that everybody be provided collection service, everybody. So, you know, the push is on in a big way to get the organics out of the waste stream and into composting facilities and or some other alternatives, but it's all you end up in composting for the most part because of the cost effectiveness of it. So the problem we're going to have is there's going to be so much compost, there's no empty place for it to go, unfortunately. I really do feel like you're right. We need to push the backyard composting where applicable, but we need to overcome those challenges of the apartment complexes and the multi-housing units and stuff. And they are. It is possible to overcome them, but unfortunately, like everything, it takes money. You know, it just takes money and the resources to get it done.
Do we still have an employee over there taking compost? Part of this business, we have. Did you codify a policy?
No, there is a policy in place that does not have.
Okay.
So,
do you sell those composting containers for backyards?
We do. We do have a.
I didn't know, Bill, because they're very good. If you don't need a lot of.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law lived in Kingston and had a very, like a postage stamp yard, and had one in his yard. It was very easy to take care of.
We have an annual sale of those. I do not have the details of when that's happening right now, but I can also get that for you if you'd like. And we're going to work on, I was just, as a matter of fact, just had a conversation with Angie today about this, and said, you know, we need to come up with the ways to give more of these away. Because obviously to have a sale is one thing, but if you can have some giveaways, you can actually get a little more interest and get some people aware of this, of these items and stuff sometimes. So, you know, we're talking about at the fair maybe this next year having, you know, several of them out there to give away. We're talking about some other possible festivals and stuff like that to go to and people are present.
Well, we should definitely do it at the fair for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people.
So in a previous life, when we were involved in more fundraising groups, too, all these legislators are probably involved with some fundraising groups in their community that are looking for prizes to give away. Just keep that in the back of your mind as a prize at your local Rotary Club.
Yeah.
Well, those would be great giveaways at the Climate Smart booth next year. So.
Raffle tickets.
I want to add just one thing, and that is we believe that we'll have a draft of the Zero Waste Implementation Plan in time for the staff and the board of the RRA to look at it, and would like to get on the December agenda. We had hoped to ask for November, but we're not ready, but I think we will be by December. So
I'm sorry, Matt, ready for what? Excuse me.
The way that the Zero Waste Implementation Plan is going to get reviewed is it'll go to the RRA and to the Recycling Oversight Committee, which Legislator Petit chairs, and then we'll have stakeholder meetings, and it'll probably get significantly revised. But when everybody is comfortable with it, then the hope is that the RRA board will submit that to the DEC as an amendment to the local solid waste plan, and that the legislature will, just as we did for the local solid waste management plan, for those who were here, back then we felt that the plan was vague. It had a lot of information on waste diversion, but it was not as specific. It didn't have an implementation plan. It does have an implementation plan for a landfill or in Sorga or export by rail. And that's one other thing I want to bring up, and I actually was thinking of writing a letter to Chair Beinkaffner, to Dr. Beinkaffner, is that, you know, the agency's been somewhat in transition, but there is a plan with an implementation timeline, and I think it's important to address that. It's going to take some catching up, but it's not just a document to put on the shelf. It is a commitment. So I just want to mention that. Yes, please.
You had, Scott, did I hear you right? If we grow the composting that's done here in Ulster County, that we're not sure what we would use it all for or where we'd put it?
No, I'm sorry. That wasn't clear. In California, with what we were doing, we were actually kind of putting the cart before the horse, in a sense. You know, we were very eager to get it out of the waste stream, which I totally agree with. However, we didn't have a plan. We didn't have the infrastructure to do it, and we also didn't have a plan for what you're going to do with the product once you get it. And as we've, you know, saw this coming at us down the line, as, you know, the legislation and the state was putting this together, and we're looking down the road going, how are we going to handle these mandates? We, at the time I left, still didn't have answers for, you know, we were going to build infrastructure, obviously. You're just going to go out and have to do that. But what are you going to do with the product? when you're done with it. I had a very large program, composting facility that I was responsible for, and we had a lot of material that we struggled to get rid of. There just wasn't enough farmers and enough backyard enthusiasts to take enough of it. So we literally had it sitting in huge mountains going, you know, and now we're going to have this much more added to. Shouldn't have that problem in this small county.
Right.
Statewide it is a little bit different, but I was just mentioning that that was kind of some of the stuff we were challenged with. So I would not want to sound any alarms about trying to get it out for the county here or anything. I think you just work at it and we build our program up larger if we need to. And if there's actually markets for it, private sector will build their programs up to accept it if they need to as well, you know, because that's what they're there for. So
thank you for that clarification.
Yeah. Kind of a multi-faceted question. We did just raise the tipping fee a little bit, right? Did I hear that? I'm a big supporter of raising the tipping fee, but way higher than it is probably anywhere. But one of the biggest million-dollar question I think for us is how do we create less solid waste? And we're not going to compost our way out of it. We're never going to get the community to compost enough. We're never going to sort our way out of it. How do we, and year after year, we seem to, even though we're trying, seem to, I believe, create more solid waste. 10 to 20% of any, you know, the people that are staying overnight creating trash in our county don't even live here. How do you get us off the trend line that we're on with regards to year after year creating solid waste? And something that we, I think, shot down a couple of years ago was GUS, which basically what the plan was to create more solid waste, team up with two other counties, guarantee ourselves a place for years to come at a decent rate because of the volume that we'd be able to guarantee Seneca Meadows or some other landfill. There's a lot of talk of wanting to spot a landfill. People still even talk about a burn facility. I don't know how, like you just spoke before, it's putting the cart before the horse. I don't know how we talk about spotting a landfill or a burn facility when we continue to create more and more and more and more. How do you, I mean, and I happen to think it's the tipping fee. If you're not aggressive, and we'll try to find savings all over other places, I don't want to raise many fees or taxes, but that is one I want to raise. And I was just wondering, how involved were you in the discussion with the board to raise the tipping fee? How did were you for it? And what do you think of the tipping fee as, in my opinion, the biggest, probably going to be the biggest factor in reducing solid waste production all over the country? Do you agree? And where do you how involved were you with this last one? And what do you think the number is? And if, and what are your other ideas for reduce? Because we haven't been able to. Your predecessors haven't. We just keep producing more and more solid waste, and I think it's unsustainable.
Okay. So that's quite a bit there, so hopefully I don't get too far off the rails here on my answer.
Okay, how about this? What do you think about the tipping fee and a high tipping fee, and what are other solutions?
So first of all, the tipping fee, I had nothing to do with this tipping fee increase. It was done right before I got here. Actually, they actually voted on it the day they offered me the job.
Okay.
So I really had nothing to do with it. And it was like, I hope I don't walk into a bunch of angry mobs wanting to, you know, stab me with pitchforks because they raised their rates. Because I've been there before in that scenario. So here's what I can tell you. When it comes to tipping fees in solid waste, the theory that they that they somehow or another deter people from creating waste in the first place doesn't work. Unfortunately, it doesn't. What happens is that same waste will be created, but it'll get dumped on the side of the road. You'll increase illegal dumping. You'll increase that type of stuff, the litter and everything else is what happens. And we've seen it. I mean, I literally have been a part of it where it backfired on us. So I don't speak from opinion. It's from experience. Just people, you'll get the price to the point where people just go, I ain't taking it in. I ain't paying for that subscription service because it's too high. I can't afford it.
On enforcement, law enforcement, and everything else, and with the technologies we have now, the ability to put camera—that's.
I encourage you. I will go with you to California and show you the cities where this and the rural areas where it's happening. I will literally walk through, show you where it's happening, and I'll show you where I worked, and I went to the local politicians and say we need to raise our fees because we can't sustain our landfills and our stuff unless our fees go up. And it just directly impacted. As soon as our fees got to a certain level, we start seeing more illegal dumping. We start seeing more of this stuff on the side of the road. And now we're spending money to go out and clean that up. And now we've got, you know, we're trying to burden law enforcement that's already saying we don't have the resources to do what we're supposed to do. We can't do this for you. And I don't know about Ulster County in New York. I'm new here, so I could be off base
well,
on
people,
that.
People,
I'm,
that, no,
I,
that
I could be off base
big,
on that.
That's a big reason that you get.
My
I just
experience.
Can't accept it, and I think it's the job of government to do something about it.
And I agree.
Did they
and
raise the did they raise the fines and the crime and the criminology? I mean, well, then they didn't do everything they could.
Honestly,
do.
Honestly, and the state of California, like I said, may not be a good example. Honestly, in the state of California, I can tell you right now, you go and steal $5,000 worth of anything out of a store, and you're walking on the streets yeah. next day, and you can do it again. Chance of you ever actually being locked up for any length of time for it, slim. It's just the way that states went, and that's part of the reason why I left. Okay, because the quality of life was going way down for those of us who were law-abiding people and wanted a nice place to live. And so,
you come to New York.
That's true. I come to New York, and I'm going to tell you right now. You know, I've only been here a short period of time, but your countryside is beautiful. It's clean. I don't see all the litter. I see very little litter on the side of the road. I haven't. Well, I take that back. The only illegal dumping I found is on the property that. UCRA bought next door to us. There's illegal dumping on it. I went and I toured it, and I was really disappointed. I was like, I haven't seen any illegal dumping until I get here. And it's the land we just bought, so we're cleaning that up. But anyhow, you know, I haven't, my experience here in the short time I've been here, okay, people do tend to act like they care a little more about how things look, you know, in the environment. Crime-wise, I don't know. I haven't been here long enough to really know what the crime levels were like, but it doesn't feel unsafe to me. I was feeling unsafe in California.
Well,
but back to the waste stuff to answer some of your other questions. Okay, so how do we reduce the creation of waste? I think you do have to aim at maximizing reduction at source, right? So the zero waste type initiatives and stuff are what you want to work on. But I will tell you this, I've been involved in a couple of those. I'll give you this one as an example. I was the director of solid waste services for the county of Mariposa in California. Mariposa is a very rural county. Plenty of acreage, it's all mountain community, but there were only 18,000 permanent residents at the time in the county. However, the county hosts Yosemite National Forest. Yosemite National Forest has visitors from all over the world coming through all year long, and on any given day we have millions of people in the county developing trash. And here we are with this population of 18,000 in this county. It's very rural, mountainous stuff, you know, and we're dealing with the trash that's being developed by millions of people coming through. So it was a unique challenge there. And working with the National Park Service and stuff, we started a zero waste initiative there and stuff. And it went a long ways to reduce the amount of waste coming out of that park. It really did. It did some good things. Did we ever get close to zero waste? No. They're not close to zero waste now. But we did make a great impact. So I think you do that on a local level. And you make the biggest impact you can. And you just push and keep pushing and keep trying. And we want to make the biggest impact we can. To actually reduce the amount of waste, though, if you really want to change, make the big change, it's got to be at the national level. The packaging has to change. The governance at the top needs to start creating a situation where the packaging companies and the marketing companies and these guys who are selling this society and our
Amazon
country,
and
a lot, yeah, all the baloney that's being sold and pushed out there to the public, that you know, we're a consumer society. We like it easy, and they're making it easy for us. And guess what? Despite your best intentions, most people consume what they're giving us, and then it ends up in our waste stream. And the only way you're going to really impact that and stop that in the long run, it has to be a national effort. It's the local efforts are great. We'll do what we can and we'll get as much as we can. We won't give up, right? We're not going to give up. We're going to keep trying. But that packaging is still going to come, and it's still going to end up our waste stream.
I want to move us on, and if you don't mind, and hear from the EMC, because we still have our resolutions to get through. Yeah.
May I just add one thing real quick before Deputy Olivier leaves? And I was hoping that we could maybe discuss with Chair Green and Chelsea about possibly setting a date to come and tour the facility for the members of the committee.
To tour the facility. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are trying to address this in the zero waste plan, and we'll welcome comments once we have a more complete version. I do want to say at the Ulster County Fair, when we used to do public recycling at the fair, we were able to divert 70% of the waste stream at the Ulster County Fair, including, you know, food waste, which we mixed with animal bedding and leaves and composted, and switching to materials that can be composted, et cetera. There are many, many ways to address this, but the goal is to start to create a circular economy where if you do get packaging, that packaging can definitely be recycled and not, oh no, we take this, but we don't take that. Go ahead. All right.
So can we ask Director Olivier to maybe provide us with a couple of dates that we could consider
For touring the facility?
Yes.
When you get back to
us? We can send it in the email and just open it up to sometimes, that we'd be available. Also, the other thing I will offer, and I don't know if you guys would be interested or if it's even appropriate for you to consider, but I will offer this. So I offered for the supervisors to hold their breakfast meeting they have every month at our room, at our office, and
that's cool.
And to have their meeting there, and then we're going to give them a tour. We could do something similar with this committee if you guys wanted it, if it's possible for you to have the meeting off location.
Law enforcement, we did that. Mm-hmm. We did the jail, yes. We did the restorative center. So
we can definitely do that as well. Yeah, that would be a great way. The hospital.
I do believe that the Recycling Oversight Committee had plans to tour UCRA, and that was in the works. So I don't know if that's something
maybe
that
we could piggyback
combined
with them, so you're not
that makes a lot of sense.
You know what? We
do
tours all the time, and I don't mind doing multiple. So it does either way is fine. Don't feel like you're putting us out though, because that's okay. To be honest with you, I really am. I'm happy to see the amount that we give, but I feel like there's a lot of misunderstanding out in the county as I'm new. And I want to definitely bridge that gap of knowledge and make sure that people understand what we're currently doing, but also that not just that, but it, we're all kind of understand what we should be doing moving forward versus what we've done in the past. So, and that's what I'm hoping, being new and coming in, that I'm able to, you know, kind of new beginning,
right.
Let's start moving forward, looking at all of our options, you know, never give up on trying to stop it from being created in the first place, or you know, ended up in the waste stream in the first place. But you also got to plan for what you're going to do with it on the end, the landfill stuff, issues and stuff, and the best plans for that as well. So we're looking at everything to move forward.
With that, I'm going to call on Dave and ask for an EMC, a quick EMC update.
Very quick. Just to let
Thank
you know that the EMC is putting together a comment letter, and we'll send you a copy of that after our next meeting on the 30th, so you can review what we're sending with regard to the Ashokan thing. Sometime the planning department, it came up at our meeting, they're doing something called Housing Smart Communities. I didn't get a lot of understanding of exactly what that entailed, but that might be something that they could present to you as well. Sort of based on climate smart, but they're doing it with housing at this point in time. And the only other thing I would mention is that our next meeting speaker is going to be on from the Department of the Environment or Environmental Conservation on wildlife and endangered species in Ulster County.
Mm.
And I find that particularly important because, at least in the town of Shongham, Planning Board, many, many development projects now in the CEQA process have to address these endangered species, the harrier hawk and so forth, the northern harrier, and how that impacts that particular development. So it might be of interest. But we'll let you know that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Interesting.
All right. With that, I would like to get to the resolution. The first one is resolution number 538, approving the execution of a contract for $90,000 entered into by the county with Citizens for Local Power. And I think they were citizens. I don't know if they...
They still are.
They still are.
They still are.
And Department of Finance, so let's see. I did have that here a minute ago, the resolutions. They're here. All right, thank you. Just open for discussion.
Move to discuss.
Yes, a second. Okay. And any questions or discussions on... This is for $90,000. It's $30,000 a year for 3 years, and it's to provide workforce development training. So that, you know, my feeling is that if we use ARPA funding for this training and for the low-income housing energy retrofits, that will be in really good stead for inflation reduction and infrastructure funding that's already earmarked, but you know, will be coming from the federal government. And there was an event this afternoon detailing that, and I couldn't get to it, but you all set?
Trying.
Okay. Yeah. Any discussion on Resolution 538?
Can
yes, please.
Can you just clarify how this ties in more specifically with Resolution 497, which we passed last month?
Yeah. This actually came through ARPA before that. And the relationship is that the training will essentially be done by CLP in partnership with, and Dennis, correct me if I don't say this right, but in partnership with RUPCO. RUPCO already has, that's not this resolution, but I'm painting the whole picture. Mm-hmm. RUPCO already has funding to repair low-income housing. So in addition, some of those low-income housing would be eligible for 497 funding to do energy upgrades and reduce their energy costs and reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. So the training would be done by CLP. They'll work out an arrangement where those contractors are working with RUPCO that will help to provide a trained workforce, and hopefully in the future we'll get more money. So this is for an administrator for 3 years for CLP to focus on that. Did I make that clear?
Yeah, I have a follow-up.
Yeah.
So I remember last month's resolution mentioned homeowners. So that sounds pretty clear. The person who owns the property or who lives there gets to do it, but not, say, a tenant in an apartment that has a landlord, unless, of course, the landlord agreed. And you just mentioned a RUPCO program, which also provides some funds to low-income, did you say residents? Or in other words, I guess what I'm getting at is, how could a tenant in an apartment do this? Do they absolutely need their landlord permission? Do we have some something in the county program so far that would enable a tenant to kind of say, look, my apartment is falling apart, I need to do this thing, the landlord's not able to do it for whatever, or willing for whatever reason, can it go ahead and do it?
I don't know how that could be done.
I'm going to ask Dennis.
So I can say that we don't have something. There are programs out there under community development block grants that essentially provide what they call landlord funding for improvements for landlords. We have not accessed that funding, mainly because there's a lot of reasons, but mainly because one of the difficulties is you have to pay for relocation costs. So if you have to move somebody out of the apartment in order to rehab the apartment, you have to find a place and have to pay for that. That's one of the reasons. One of the things I would say to you is that we have explored, and hopefully if we ever get around to talking about the $17 million that the county executive has essentially set in an assigned reserve for housing, one of the things that we'd like to do, and that RUPCO has done in the past and others, is a landlord repair program where you actually provide funding to the landlord to do repairs on the facility. And then as part of that, you get a return on that is the landlord has to keep the rent at an affordable level. And it's a period of time. It's usually 5 to 7 years, depending upon the amount of work. But that allows the landlord, it basically does two things. It allows the landlord to make improvements to the facility, and it provides the apartment owner, the tenant, a better facility and ensures its affordability over a longer period of time.
Go ahead.
So just to follow up on that, thank you for that, Planner Doyle. And that reminds me that in last night's committee, legislator Uchitel had mentioned his intention to try and beef up that fund somehow.
I talked to the legislator Uchitel, and we've also had the conversation with RUPCO as well, with their folks as well. So I think in the Orange County area and in some areas in Ulster County, they were able to essentially provide over $2 million worth of funding for that program.
Excellent. Okay. Anything else on Resolution 538? Hearing nothing, no more comment, I'm going to call the question. All in favor of Resolution Number 538, $90,000 of contract with Citizens for Local Power for ARPA. Oh, you're saying you are in favor. Okay, anyone opposed? Joe, are you in favor? Okay. Motion carries. Resolution Number 544, establishing a capital project number 648, Ulster Delaware Corridor Rail Trail, Shandaken. And the PIN number, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute agreement for federal aid with New York State DOT, amending capital 2022 capital program, declaring intent to act as lead agency CEQA planning department. And this is the first time since we had our little training that we have a CEQA request for the county to become lead agency. And I'd like to ask Attorney Gordon to put this in perspective for us.
Okay. This resolution has several moving pieces to it. It's got a number of resolved clauses, so I want to try to categorize them for everybody because if you understand the pieces, I think things will be a little bit simpler. One piece of this is to take the preliminary studies, the preliminary engineering for this project, and do a couple of things with it. One is pull it out of CEQA, which is actually correct because the preliminary studies for an action is what's called a Type 2 action. So the preliminary studies can essentially be exempt from CEQA. You don't have to go through CEQA to approve that, whereas you do have to go through CEQA to approve the funding for the project and do the project. If you don't do the preliminary studies, you actually have no resources to even know in detail what the project is or what the impacts are going to be. So you can pull that out at the beginning, and what this is going to be asking us to do is pulling it out from CEQA and approving the funding for the preliminary studies and to tell the approving doing them, And that's not trivial, by the way. That's $660,000, of which 530 is federal funds. Is that right? Mm-hmm. 130 county. So what you're asking, so the preliminary thing they're asking for is to pull the preliminary studies out of SEACR, which I believe is justified as a type 2 action because it's preliminary studies. But here it's quite significant. It's going to be a $500,000 federal funding, $100,000 of county funding, and you are approving that. So you're pulling out of SEACR and just flat out approving on this piece. And so that's one piece of what they're doing. It is legitimate under SEACR. You guys have to decide whether you think it's appropriate, but it's from a SEACR perspective, it's okay, and you can do that. Then they're also asking for two other sets of things on the main project, the overall project, and we may have some other issues on this. The first one, which is just a procedural problem, is you're being asked to do certain SEACR things on the main project, in particular to declare yourselves lead agency. That's a normal thing to do. The problem here is that, and we've talked with the administration about this in the within the context of a different resolution, but one of the things that I think the committee should do, I'd recommend, is that for any SEACR action you take, starting with declaring yourselves lead agency, that you ask the administration for the basic documentation. And under SEACR, the basic documentation for SEACR purposes is called an EAF. You may have heard that term. It's an environmental assessment form. That basically tells you where, how big, what is it. Go back to a show from the 60s, it's just a fax, ma'am. And also, when you do declare yourselves lead agency, you have to send out a notice of lead agency to the other agencies in that process. Those regulations call for you to attach the EAF to that notice of lead so the other agency knows what you're talking about. You can't just describe it in one sentence. The EAF tells them what just the facts, ma'am, too. So I checked with Chelsea before. We don't have that documentation yet. And so I'd recommend that I'd recommend to the committee that we begin to adopt an approach that for us to take a SEACR action, we have to have an EAF in whatever else was provided. Otherwise, we don't know what it is necessarily, and we can't do what they say, which is to send out the notice. And then furthermore, there's also some of these resolve clauses actually have us making certain promises on the main action. And I wanted to ask you about this because I just was a little confused about it. We're essentially resolving to commit to funding the project if it turns out the funding is...
If first instance funding is required for all NYSDOT projects. If you won't require first instance funding, then you can't sign the contract.
Now, first instance, are you talking about the planning or are you talking about the overall project?
You have to fund the first instance funding for the contract. So if you're signing the contract is basically saying you're doing the first instance funding. And then what ends up happening is you can seek reimbursements. If the federal funds disappear, then you can stop the contract.
But you're talking about for the actual construction.
No. All your first instance funding is related
to the planning.
It's to the contract that you're currently signing.
The planning.
That's correct.
Okay. So as long
as phase one.
Phase one, the legislature back in 2021 that allowed us to submit the application in October of 2021. You authorize the county executive to submit an application and assurances to the New York State Department of Conservation, and in that application, you authorize the entire amount as a local match, which is $990,000.
Dennis, if you don't mind, can I just read it and we can maybe work through the words to see if it's what we want to be saying? Because I hear you talking about first instance, but I'm looking now on page 3. This is going to be the fourth and the fifth resolved down.
Sure.
You guys can tell me if this is not where you want to go, but I'm just working through this as you are. But the wording seems to say, resolved, et cetera. The legislature is hereby, the chair is hereby authorized to execute any necessary agreements in connection with the advancement or approval of the project. So she can execute any agreement with the advancement or approval of the project and providing for the administration of the project.
That's correct.
And the county's first instance funding of the project. So she's being authorized to sign whatever agreements for the project.
As we go through this, what ends up happening is that you get funding. You'll get funding for the original application will come in. Then the second piece of this, because you're going to get funding for detailed design, preliminary and detailed design. Then you come back and you'll get funding for construction and construction inspection. So the necessary assurances is through all of those things. There's a whole bunch of necessary insurances you have to do. I think in the past, we've come back to the legislature when the second contract came in, when the second phase came in. If that's not the case, then I that's what my intention would be.
So the whole, basically, these two paragraphs are all related to that first instance that you were talking about.
Yes, although I would note that when we submitted the application, the legislature did authorize the first instance funding for the entire project, $4,900,000 to the tune of $990,000.
The first phase.
The first phase. Yes, it's only the first phase.
So, in general, under SEACR, like I said, you can pull off the planning, but the authorization for the project is the last thing we would after we do the SEACR study, then we can authorize the project. So, I need to work with you more to figure out how all this fits together, and I
know exactly where you're going, and we've had the conversation. The problem is
with the state.
The problem with the state is if you won't authorize the funding for the project to start with, you can't apply for the grant.
Okay.
it's that catch-22 that exists between the SEACR regulations and what the state is requiring you to do, essentially to apply for a grant.
I'll drill deeper to get to the bottom of this question, but the other question I want to throw back out there, as long as we're doing something for the project, I think the EAF is, including declaring lead agency and this other stuff, I would suggest that the administration provide us with the EAF so we know what it is.
Dennis, would you have an issue with that?
The only issue I have is one of the things that we're doing is we're doing design. We're doing preliminary design, right? So doing an EAF without having a preliminary design is always iffy, because what ends up happening is you're circulating something and you haven't even designed it yet.
Well, maybe we should hold off on declaring lead agency.
You can't. I mean, you really, because the department, when you get done with preliminary design, the department is going to ask you to essentially go through and make your SEACR determinations. And there's no other agencies except DEC and others that are involved. It sounds complex, but you're really in that bind between the two agencies.
What if we stop short of a technical EAF? I mean, in your application, you're going to have some specifics, which is what you're speaking to. We could have a policy that requires something where we get some kind of generic overall plan.
Do you have a length
that you could derive from your application?
The length, the location.
So here's, and here's, let me, and I appreciate this because I think this is important. What I would try to do is submit a draft EAF, and the draft, and indicate that that's a draft when it goes out in the cover letter. We haven't submitted cover letters. We haven't submitted EAFs with our cover letters in the past, and we submit to the Department of Environmental Conservation all the time, and they've never asked us for one.
In other words, what your vision was, if we were to approve this, you'd send out a notice of intent to be lead to the other agencies, which might only be DEC, without an EAF on it, even though the regs call for an EAF.
Yeah, and we've done that in the past all the time, and no one's ever asked us for an EAF.
But they're supposed to have it.
It's in the regs, and as I said...
So what you're saying is... No, but no county is often putting an EAF in on some of these things.
I can tell you that most of the time,
well?
The example I will give you is that zoning changes come in for the municipalities all the time, and they never have EAFs associated with them. They establish lead agencies.
So our request or our policy could be a draft form of an EAF.
I can do that. Not a problem.
Let's
for
do
me.
That. I think zoning changes do typically have EAFs, but and also what the planner was saying was that, you know, he's not going to have all the specifics of the project, but I still think we might have, I mean, we know what some of the basics here, but it's worthwhile getting on paper. How long is this? It's going to be phases, but we're only talking about one phase now, phase number one. How many miles is it? Where does it start? Where does it end? These are literally the basics.
And the only thing you're doing in the EAF that you're sending out is the part one, which is essentially the description of the project.
I get
a little leery on some of the descriptions, but this is a short EAF as an unlisted, so there's not as bad. The long EAFs are really, really, if you don't know what your project is in design, you can't answer the questions on the long EAF.
I guess what I would say is obviously, if you don't know the answer yet, because we haven't designed it yet, you can leave that blank and we can fill it in later. But I just think it helps us as a matter of course to have just the basics and what we know. It's just so many miles long, starts here, ends here, so everybody has
them. And I'll get that to the clerk. Give me till Monday. Okay.
Okay. So my summary is that for the phase, for the part, the type two, the pulling out the planning, I think is appropriate. You can see the negotiations are going under on the procedure on the initial things that we're supposed to do on the main project. I think it's some form of the AF is going to be helpful, so we can declare lead agency and do some of these other things.
Go ahead.
I have a couple questions that are more on the financial side. I heard the figure around $4 million authorized. I heard $990,000 authorized. What's the ballpark overall right now cost that we're thinking for the whole project?
The project is phase one. It runs from High Mount to Giggle Hollow, and the estimated cost is $4.9 million. We have a grant from the state of $3.9 million under a TAP grant. And that's what's funding the first phase of this.
Does that 4.9 include the engineering part, or is that?
That's everything. Yes, okay. That's correct.
So that's not that's including $600,000 of engineering.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm sorry. So the 4.9 is the whole kit and caboodle. Okay.
Correct.
And a follow up.
Have we gone out to?
No.
Bid for the engineering.
We have what they call an LDSA list, which is essentially a list of the engineering firms within the region that can do this kind of work. And we've done what they call an expression of interest. So there's an expression of interest letter comes in. This is all regulated by the Department of Transportation. That comes in, and we're going to review those. We have, I can't tell you how many we have, but there's about 15 people. There's about 15 engineering firms on the LDSA list, and that's what we'll use.
All right, thanks, sorry.
That's okay. And again, my second question is probably more appropriate for Ways and Means, but I'm not on that committee, so I'll ask since I'm on this committee. I see you were proposing here to bond for this portion, and it's 80% federal reimbursable. Is that going to cover the interest we have to pay on the bonds? And if not, are we needing to do it this way or proposing to because this is giving us a head start? Do we know what the interest is likely to cost us?
I don't, but I will tell you that all your resolutions, when you look at bonding, is bonding on the amount that you essentially provide for in the cost of the project. It doesn't include interest on the bonds. They're all literally set up to essentially, here's what we're going to pay, here's the bond, here's the serial bonding resolution. They're not set up to cover cost. I can tell you that we're currently making comments on the capital program as required, and I can tell you that bonding costs for $8 million is about $430,000 on an annualized basis.
When it's passed through money like that, this is probably something I should already know, but when we're only putting in 20%, we're bonding on the whole thing, or just,
no.
Just our section.
What'll end up happening is the reason for the bonding, this is my opinion, I'm not the finance person. The reason for the bonding is when you have that first instance funding. So that's the first thing. So it's cash flow more than anything else. So you probably won't bond this as a long term debt if there's a cash flow issue. You'll probably bond it as a bond anticipation note or something of that nature. And then if we don't need it, you don't bond it. But if you're only going to bond when you're done for that portion of the project that essentially is the county cost, assuming that you have to.
We authorize bonds, but we don't always go out and get those bonds.
That's right.
Yeah. But
if we have enough cash flow, we don't.
But why would we ask for the approval?
You
have to do it. You have to say willing to bond us if we have to.
Yeah.
But if we don't have to, we're not going to. It's just like if you want to put an addition on your house, and if you find out you can hit, you go to do it and you find out that the guy who's doing the windows has got a special deal and he'll let you be in the street for a year and a half. The deal is out there right now.
I will give you is if you look in this year's capital program, what you'll see is the legislature has about $105 million worth of bonding, which is authorized but not issued.
By the way,
is that what you're looking at? Yeah.
This is what I was saying. Even for the full project, we're basically taking certain steps to authorize, not completely, but basically to authorize Tracy to sign certain contracts for the full project without having looked at this, because Dennis is saying that's what we need to do to get the thing started. But I'm going to look into this for you, but it's, you can see the problem here both in terms of SEACR and in terms of your commitments.
Yeah, the SEACR problems are going to complicate yourself if you're basically trying to say that you can't authorize funding without having a SEACR determination, which is what the law says. But if you do that, you're going to run yourself into every project you authorize funding for.
It's a SEACR thing, but it's also a real thing. You're authorizing these activities.
I was going to ask that we try to resolve this and ask that moving forward, if there's a lead agency determination, that if it's possible, you know, to have, when it comes over to the legislature, to have a draft EAF.
Sure.
And I want to get the sense of the committee knowing that we will see that on Monday or so. How you want to proceed, and you know, given that this is the first time we're sort of being hard-nosed about it, shall we say, you know, we're really trying to practice what the SEACR law says, and we do understand that there's a conflict. And I want to just see how the committee would like to proceed. So
right now, can we can vote contingent upon receiving a draft.
Yeah. Or as amended by what was suggested.
As long as you're satisfied that you understand the project well enough to want to declare a lead agency from just the verbal descriptions that you've seen without the EAF.
Right. And the fact it's also already been voted on in the past. And
The variety of things here. Yeah, I mean, yes. The answer is, as long as you're satisfied, you can do that.
Right. Well, I would be willing to do that. I
mean, I apparently forgot to move this for a discussion. Is that right? Well, we did the previous, but we jumped right into this. So I'd like to ask for a motion for discussion. Okay, moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion? And if not, I think there's a clear understanding moving forward. And this is, you know, something that I think is time sensitive.
Yes, it is.
So you know, I think we've had a clear discussion.
And I think we should thank Attorney Gordon for pointing this out, how this has been lacking.
I'm on a learning curve too, so I'll let you guys know what it turned out.
This is how we'll learn, so that we can pay more attention rather than feel overwhelmed and say, well, I guess it's okay, rubber stamp. We want to think it through. But we need the information.
So just even if we don't amend it, the implicit understanding is that the authorization to send out a notice of intent to be lead will be contingent on receipt of some form of draft or preliminary EAF.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So given that, all in favor of resolution number 544 with regard to the Ulster and Delaware Corridor Rail Trail, Shandaken. And authorizing the chair to execute agreement for federal aid with the New York State Department of Transportation and amending the capital program to be consistent with that.
I'm in favor.
Anyone opposed? All right, motion carries. And now we're on to
546.
Resolution number 546, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with Hudson River Drinking Water Intermunicipal Council, the Hudson 7, to include Ulster County as a member and to provide financial assistance for hiring of a full-time protection coordinator, Department of the Environment. Nick, can you help us understand?
Motion to discuss.
Go ahead. Oh, motion for discussion.
Second.
Okay. And that was Bill and Joe. Please.
Start with a little bit of background about the council itself, if it's helpful.
Hudson 7?
Yeah. Okay. The Hudson 7 was formed as a intermunicipal agreement between 7 municipalities in the Mid-Hudson region that draw the drinking water from the Hudson River in 2018. Those towns are 5 from Dutchess County, 2 from Ulster County, town of Esopus and town of Lloyd in Ulster County, and in Dutchess County, Hyde Park, the town and city of Poughkeepsie, and the town and village of Rhinebeck. The purpose of the Hudson 7 is drinking water protection for those towns that draw the drinking water. And it does that through different positions it takes on issues in the watershed for the Hudson River and through drinking water source protection planning initiatives. Some of those topics are the Champlain Hudson Express project that the committee is familiar with, hazards related to infrastructure from CSX, and then the turbid water releases from the Shokan Reservoir that we previously discussed. To date, from 2018, the council has been supported by Riverkeeper as for administrative support. It has no staff and only consists of a liaison from each of those municipalities that make up the intermunicipal council. Through this resolution, the county is making a commitment to support the Hudson 7 to hire a what is titled a drinking water Hudson River Source Water Protection Coordinator position to support the work of the council and provide some continuity of its work over the period of time that the county will be supporting it, and beyond that to allow that position to be self-funded through grant funding and other ways. That's the intention.
We're paying for the whole position. Mm-hmm.
So the county is committing a portion. Right. So
what is that portion?
So we are matching a commitment from Dutchess County of $25,000 per year over 3 years. And then each of the 7 municipalities who actually make up the intermunicipal council are committing smaller amounts to per year for 3 years to that position. Those amounts range from $2,500 to $5,000 per year over the 3 year period.
We have 2 towns in the event Dutchess County with five.
I know there's some yeah.
What?
I usually have an issue with things like that. It's such a small amount, but that you would think it would be a little more proportionate, especially right. Considering the city you picked. I mean, even if you go by population or
right,
usage,
yeah. Population.
It's 25 apiece.
That's what we proposed.
Now, they have a water and wastewater department, right, that we don't have. Is that, are they involved in this at all, Dutchess County?
If you want to start in
the
area.
It's the Dutchess County Planning Department who is the liaison from the county with the Hudson 7. And then from the Department of the Environment, we provide a liaison as well for the work that they do.
So now, I have a question. The wording of the resolution indicates that they're going to the Hudson 7 are going to amend their intermunicipal agreement, that we're going to become parties to the agreement. Is it
yes.
going to be full voting members, so it would be the Hudson 9 in effect, or is it some subordinate status for the counties?
It's not.
Right. So Amendment 1 to the intermunicipal agreement will include Dutchess County and Ulster County as members. Dutchess County asked, as part of their participation, that they become a voting member in the council. We did not.
The county themselves.
Yeah. They
don't
have voting.
So Esopus and
question.
Lloyd will have one person
each. They will each have
but
one.
The county will not have.
Well, Dutchess is asking for that. You said.
Dutchess is asking for a voting position. We have not asked for a voting position. Our intent for supporting the Hudson 7 is to fund that position and keep the relationship that we've had with the council, which is a non-voting liaison to the council.
But who made that? Go ahead.
I was just going to ask why.
Well, that means there's eight people, so they're going to have an even amount of voting members? Doesn't even make any sense.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
That's true.
Seven plus Duchess.
So it doesn't make any sense. Who breaks a tie? Why don't we just request to be on there? It makes 9. We're paying the same amount.
Well, my question was, why would we agree not to have a voting?
Yeah.
It's that they didn't put it up like it sounds like where they were like we want to be the only. They just said we would like and Ulster County didn't.
Right. And how I would describe the reasoning is the council has its goals and objectives, and we support the goals and objectives of the council through the towns that are members of the council. But we do not, as the county, we do not necessarily want to.
If I may, it's a tricky business because some of the issues, like the Champlain Hudson Canal, Power Express, are controversial issues. But I do know that Chair Bartels is also very concerned that. Why would we contribute and not be a voting member?
Well, and you have the even number of, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and we've put the same amount of money in. How are they appointing, how is the, so the municipality appoints someone.
Correct.
How is Dutchess County, is it an executive appointee? Is it a legislative appointment?
I don't know how they
do it. It says it's executive.
Right, executive.
Dutchess County executive shall appoint a member to the council.
And same with us.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct.
So,
I'd like to appoint it differently. Does everything have to be a goddamn executive appointment? Go ahead, Phil, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, just wanted to add, Legislator Hansett is from one of the towns already in the Hudson 7, and I wasn't able to talk with Legislator Litz, the other legislator from Lloyd, but I did speak with the two legislators that represent parts of Esopus. And just, if I may speak for what they tell me, what they told me, that they thought that we should, if we're making this contribution and stepping it up in this way, that the county should have a vote as well.
Okay. And we'd like our chair of the legislature to choose a legislator that represents at least in part one of those districts to be ours, if we can change that language, right? Let's have it be a chair.
As the voting member.
We can entertain an amendment, I believe.
It wouldn't be a substantive change to add that to this, right?
But before we do, I want to mention one other thing, because hopefully that'll be the way we resolve this. But Chair Bartels also felt that it might, and I don't want to speak for her in her absence, but I did speak with her, and she raised a concern that, Dutchess has more municipalities and is using the Hudson River water much more than Ulster, and that she felt that it was a little bit unequal. So her concern was the voting issue and what she sees as a disproportionate sharing, where the towns are proportionate. The towns range from 2,500 to 5,000, and I assume that's based on population or use.
It's still 6-3.
Pardon?
It's still 6-3.
We
have to have major agreement from Dutchess County to have for that. I mean, it's. Are you saying that it's unfair for us to have equal representation as Dutchess because Dutchess has more skin in the game? As far as county representation, I'm just trying to follow what you're concerned.
I really hate to speak for someone else, but
is that how you took it?
Yes, my sense was that they have way more population using the river. And then also the fact that we weren't voting. So I think we're going to amend
we're putting in the same amount of money.
Something about
yeah.
funding.
Go ahead.
Not
so the prospect of matching Dutchess County's contribution with the funding, our recommendation was to match it because the work that the coordinator position will be doing will benefit both sides of the river equally. The watersheds that feed the west side of the river feed it fairly equally to the watersheds from the east side. And when we look at the lower Sopus concerns with turbidity in the water, that's an added benefit. So as the Hudson 7 through its drinking water source protection efforts develop actions and find ways to protect the watershed and protect the water through watershed protection and other methods, we feel that it would provide an equal benefit to
where would the person
water resources.
So where would the person be housed?
That hasn't been finalized, but there's been discussion that the person might be housed at the water treatment facility in Poughkeepsie or potentially at one of the member municipalities.
Okay.
Nick, not as a staff person.
I've got a question. You mentioned several times watershed protection in this context. The watershed for the river, setting aside how far up and down river we could go, but just in terms of this county, for example, is essentially the entire county. And the watershed for on the other side is essentially all of Dutchess County. So are you envisioning that these folks would essentially be coming up into our towns and questioning subdivisions and the runoff into the creeks, or is this basically a river-based thing? Because when you say watershed, what I hear is, I've been in watershed protection, so you get up and you don't move that dirt there because you're going to be polluting this reservoir. But
right.
The river is a very different dynamic.
So the Hudson 7 is currently working with the state on a drinking water source protection project where they're developing a plan. And part of that planning process is defining the boundaries of what is considered the areas that would impact
the river,
the water in the river that these drinking water supply where they're located. So that does not go all the way up to the headwaters of the Hudson River, and it stops at a certain point below Poughkeepsie, but that is something that's in the draft format right now, defining those boundaries.
This is kind of a developing thing, because typically when you do drinking water protection, let's say for a reservoir, reservoirs are extremely sensitive and there's not a lot of water in them compared to the river. So you look at the watershed, and if somebody's building a subdivision that's not being properly controlled, you get at that. This is the New York City Watershed Protection Program is about on a very much larger area. For folks that pull out the water out of the river, it's kind of an emerging concept. Do you protect the Hudson River, the drinking water quality, by going up into the Adirondacks, for example, which is part of the watershed, or is it more of a river industrial type of a thing? And that's what I was asking Nick about, what the concept is. Most people would think that, a lot of the water in the river actually comes from the sea, because it's at sea level, it's tidal. So it's a very different dynamic than your typical small city reservoir. So it's in terms of protecting drinking water, it's a different sort of a thing. Mostly you're trying to make sure that barges don't spill their cargo in the river, as opposed to going after some subdivision up in the town of Rosendale or something like that.
Why we didn't want all those barges parked in the Hudson a couple of years ago.
Different set of issues. So that,
right.
but I think it's the answer. I think it's mostly going to be in the river because you don't have one person maybe, and you have
right.
a few issues, and
right.
you're not going to go into the town of Northeast and Millerton to try to get on top of that stuff.
Yeah, maybe 10 years down the road, or if it's wildlife.
Hopefully, you don't get watershed rules and protection.
One other. Go ahead, legislator.
Don't get me.
One other point about the cost contributions from the two counties. Currently, the Hudson 7 is not incorporated in any way to be able to receive funding from anybody. So, Dutchess County has committed, as part of the amendment, up to just shy of $20,000 to pay legal fees to incorporate the Hudson 7 as a 501c3 or some other type of organization that then can receive funding contributions from the 9 municipalities who would be
participating. Is that the limit of the reference to legal fees? Because I was wondering also whether they were going to hire a lawyer to start fighting DEC and barges and things like that. Or is it just for the incorporation?
My understanding is it's just for the incorporation. And so that's something that Dutchess County has taken on entirely themselves. And then this whole, the contributions in this amendment are contingent upon that happening successfully. Mm-hmm. And being able to actually pay them. So.
Can we figure out wording for the... Go ahead.
You, please, you're in the middle of your thought.
I was going to say, because it might be, this isn't as time restrictive as something that, you know, holding Dennis up, something that involves a grant. Why don't we put this off 1 month and let both caucuses go over that? I mean, the hang-up is just whether we want representation there and how we appoint. Mm-hmm. Well, let's figure that out, and by next month we can vote on it. Yeah. I mean, if everyone's okay with that, it's not that... I mean, unless you tell me, it's going to kill you.
I think we are maybe the last of the municipalities to agree to it, to this amendment.
And I suspect that change is substantive. If you're going to, add us as a voting member...
So we either we either amend it right now, or we postpone it.
That's a big
change.
Thing, yeah.
All right, so is that a motion to postpone?
No, I'll let Phil talk first.
Or you could take no action.
Yeah, I mean, I would support the postponement. Here's my understanding of the situation. This memorandum of understanding or agreement requires us to approve this or it doesn't go forward. So we actually, I don't think we can just amend our resolution. We need to go back and approach the existing Hudson 7 and tell them our idea and ask and make our ask.
Right, so postpone.
Right, and do you agree with that, Dick?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of chicken and eggs here. I mean, they were going forward on one understanding, but, you know, the legislature moves forward as a body, and ultimately the legislature's got to vote, so I'll leave it to you guys to figure out the best way to deal with the interim
so
chicken and eggs.
Call them tomorrow and tell them it looks like there may be a request to match your, have a county representative, and if they act like that's going to be a problem, please email Chelsea and say... It's a no, but just so you guys know, it's a no-go for them, and then we can have that discussion whether we want to move forward or not. If they say no to something like that, and there's
I'd be surprised if anybody got objected to it.
Going to be able to do down the road, then I would take some pause and maybe doing it. I don't think they'll have an issue.
I agree. I don't think.
Okay, good.
I think they'll agree. The problem would be on the question is whether the county wanted it, but I can't imagine anybody objecting to it.
That's right. We're given the option.
We're in such a transition right now, so maybe we'll just leak that one in. I was just going to say, I don't have a problem with actually the bottom part of the contribution. Okay. You know, we're a smaller part of it, but I don't have a problem with that part of it. I think the voting part is the more important part.
I agree.
Yeah.
And then we have the issue of who's going to appoint the representative.
That will be discussed in court, whether it's going to be an executive or the chair, or something like that. And
that's something to look at, because when that would take place. I mean,
Since we are in a transition. Yeah.
So.
Motion postponed.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion to postpone carries. And we are up to, I believe,
yes, resolution.
Resolution, whoops.
Seven.
Yeah. Thank you. Resolution 547, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Plug-in Stations Online, Department of Environment. And before I ask for a motion to discuss, I just want to say that I have tried multiple times to replace my ChargePoint card, and now I'm at the end of my rope. I've spent hours on the phone with people who promised that I would see it within 5 to 7 days. And I'm just going to raise that because it's a huge frustration to me. And if I could get help and response, since the county is working with ChargePoint. All right, now, motion to discuss Resolution 547.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on this motion?
Yes.
Please.
So, is this going to be I saw something about charging money or exchanging or subscriptions. So does that mean the user will sign up with this installer, this company, and to pay for the electricity? Is that how that will work?
So the networking subscription is one of two parts of this contract. All of the charging stations that we currently have across the county are made by the ChargePoint company, and they're serviced by the ChargePoint company. The ChargePoint provides a network service on each station, so each station has a cell phone transmitter inside, and that transmits data to the cloud that we can access at the county and understand the usage metrics. We can charge a fee for public use. We can diagnose maintenance issues and when stations are offline, etc., and get metrics on usage. What this would allow us to do, we have to pay a fee each year to ChargePoint for that service. And that's what this is allowing us to do.
Okay.
And it's a per plug fee per year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So follow up. So this is just so that we can monitor the usage of these. This doesn't have to do with installing them or
so. Yeah. So that's one part, is the networking. And that's something that is not absolutely required, but improves the functionality of our network of charging stations. The second part is installing stations under the capital project that's established for charging stations across the county. Many of those are going to be fleet stations in the short term, because there's a need to build fleet stations to support the growing electric vehicle fleet. And that is one portion of the project cost, is installing the station on the pedestal that's been prepared for it with electrical service. So that's the firm that we're contracting with can provide both of those, and we're putting it together in one contract.
Does anyone else have something to say? I have some other questions. Concerns. So, is this? Is the electricity flowing through these charging stations from county-generated sources? Do we own the electrical generating capacity?
We do not.
Okay.
Yeah. We purchase all of our electricity from the grid.
Okay.
Except for currently at the substation in New Paltz, the salt shed, I suppose it is, garage at the fairgrounds.
How does the solar system out in Town of Ulster factor
power
into
that?
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's a power purchase agreement, and through that agreement we get monetary benefit from the electricity that's produced, and then we also get environmental attributes from the electricity, which comes as a separate transaction, but those monetary credits go toward offsetting the cost of our electricity that we buy from the grid otherwise.
Well, we're selling them to the grid then.
Yes.
Do we charge the public to use aren't our charging stations free?
Yes, we have a fee. We have a policy. It's 2 hours free and then 50 cents per hour after that.
Yep.
I have a few other thoughts about it, if I might. So, I'm certainly interested in getting us off fossil fuels as quickly and equitably as possible. So I want to be clear about that. I also want to be clear that access currently to electrical vehicles for private individuals is not equitable. We have some electric buses and whatnot, mass transit. On one hand, it almost seems like we're citing a power station, a fuel source for vehicles. It's kind of like citing a gas station for service station. But again, with that equity concern, and also as Chair Green has brought up in the past about generating electricity needing to come from non-fossil fuel sources, or we're kind of fooling ourselves, we're kind of greenwashing the whole transition to electrical vehicles. Where does this fit into all of that?
Mm-hmm. So when I say that we don't generate our own power, we don't, but we buy at the county different types of attributes that allow us to legally claim that we are using renewable electricity. So that comes through different ways. Some of it comes through the agreement we have at the Town of Ulster Landfill, power purchase agreement. We get the attributes that are generated when that power is generated. Other things are renewable energy credits that might come from a national source, wind farms, solar, across the nation. We at the county subscribe to community solar and community hydro.
I was just
going to
ask if, yeah,
right,
thank you.
Which is has its own environmental attribute concerns, but it directly supports the development. We as the county are direct financial partners in the development of those solar facilities locally. And there are a handful of other mechanisms, but the mandate we have at the Department of the Environment is 100% renewable electricity. So we arrange our procurement to be able to do that.
But in reality, mm-hmm. not what we're legally allowed to say,
sure.
Are we where we're at with regards to the electricity we're using, and if we followed where it literally came from, would we be at the percentages that we claim we're at publicly?
So you're asking whether the electrons themselves are coming from
renewable
sources
at the same
yeah.
percentages that we claim publicly to the public mm-hmm. that they are.
So through the purchase of those attributes, yes, we are. But the way, unless we were to have every building off the grid, then we could not say that. So every facility,
it's like
charging station.
I do want to say that what I'm missing tonight is the solar mapping project, and I know Marbletown participated. I don't know about everyone, you know, each of the other towns, but and New Pulse is very actively participating. But we need to get our municipalities to take leadership in implementing renewables. We can't leave it to, we're still going to need those big giant solar farms, but we need to do our share, and we're not. I do want to get back to getting this resolution so we can get out of here tonight, but I heard a lot of interest in composting earlier on, and I want to hear the same interest in getting our municipalities to take leadership to implement solar. They can model that. They can do it on their own buildings and rooftops. And there's a very good tool to help them do that. But
and through CCAs, I mean, like Marbletown,
yes.
All of Marbletown's public buildings are powered by renewable sources.
Yeah, but also to put the real infrastructure in place.
Of course, I don't know what's up with the CCA now, so that's another issue.
Anyway,
is
so with that...
Yeah, I don't know if that's even good to bring up right now, but anyway.
But do we want to act? Are people ready to call this question? So,
yeah. I'd like to ask another question. I'm inclined to vote no on this, and I'm just concerned about the prioritizing this need versus, for example, we know we need to expand public transit. We just did the free fare thing, but there's a lot of parts of the county that aren't served, and the city routes where I represent haven't really changed much since the county took it over. I'd rather put money into that sort of thing. We're going to be proposing a budget amendment to raise the wage for drivers to try and get more drivers. Why shouldn't we put the money toward that, which brings more equity instead of serving a very small proportion of people who have electric vehicles right now in our county, and for the near future, probably that won't change much.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think it's important for us to build an electric vehicle charging station infrastructure so that people, so that it does become more accessible to the entire population.
Well, it's important for the private sector to do that, I believe. I don't think we're heading towards a reality that's sustainable, that the government is supplying electric for every vehicle. When you get to a point where
right.
you have 60-70% of vehicles being electric, if the government is supplying that and
right.
you don't have the infrastructure given by the private sector, and you're starting to see a lot more of that. I'm seeing Tesla charging stations at some of these gas stations. I've said it before, the gas stations are strategically placed at the right spots
yeah.
already. And
but I think government has to take
the
lead, which we
are. Sector. I hate subsidizing the private sector. I hate pilots, but a limited pilot program or subsidy that was approachable to every single gas station or quick stop or plaza would be an approach that I would much rather see, and I think something that you're really building the infrastructure that you're talking about. But starting from this tiny little point of the government doing it for a minute in a weird way with this private company, I don't know if it's the way we need to be going.
I'd say at least 80% of the money that will be spent under this contract will be going to support county government operations. So we have fleet vehicles that in the probation department, health department, social services, public works is getting them, and we don't have enough chargers
okay.
to support those vehicles as they are. So the installation fees that this firm will do, and then the networking to keep track of all of the usage and expenditures, and the access to the station to ensure that it's reserved for fleet access, that will all be done by this contract.
What if we just cut out the 20% and focused on
mm-hmm.
our own county government
so
growing their green fleet
yeah.
and being able to have it right? I think we should focus a little more on UCAT and with regards to strategically placing these things in sensible areas where routes, taking into consideration the routes we're running as well. Now, when I asked, I didn't get a lot of, in the last meeting, there wasn't a lot of specifics in the, but I think it was, what meeting was that we had over there? We were talking to Chris Kelly a lot. Oh, the capital, it was the capital plan. And they said they're, they didn't give us a lot of specifics. Didn't sound like that they were planning on thinking about that. But as we figure out these routes and hopefully expanding in the southern part of the county in some of these areas that don't see enough buses, having charging stations strategically placed to work with the routes we're going to be running, I think is something logistically we have to think about. But I'd rather just do the 80% and put an even bigger focus on UCAT and having it be in really strategic places.
So one aspect of doing that 80% would be to take the network that we have in place now, which is primarily, actually exclusively at county facilities, and is publicly available with the exception of one station, and then taking that completely offline to the public. So we would have to dedicate those to fleet usage only, and
you're saying
we would still incur the costs for doing the networking, but
saying some of that 20% that I'm referencing is going to just upgrading the existing.
It would go to
the existing public access.
The
that
networking,
they have.
The ongoing networking fees for the infrastructure that we have.
How much of that 20% is just ongoing networking fees related?
I don't know that. I can estimate that for you. But, of those two components, I'd say this year we had a networking fee for all of the county stations of about $9,000. So that's the annual upkeep. And as our network of stations grows, that fee will grow as well. We're finding ways to, you know, negotiate that as we can, but in some sense we're limited by.
You know, a lot of your grants that are good resulted in your initial installation of chargers were dependent upon the fact that they had to be available to the public. So now you're going to run.
But
now if you start to say, well, we're only going to allow fleet vehicles to use it, then you're in a violation of the grant.
But he's saying that. What I'm asking is it upkeep or is it expansion?
Mm-hmm. So the portion of the networking fees is upkeep for existing stations, and then when new stations come online, then those fees will be paid out of the same contract. The portion of this contract that is for installations is only for growth of new stations. And of those, in the existing capital plan we have, those are primarily fleet stations, but there are some sites that where we want to install more public stations. For example, the parking lot at the UCAD bus garage, we're planning to put stations in the parking lot so that those could be available for fleet vehicles within the UCAD fleet during certain hours, and then available to the public users who are using the UCAD facility other times as well. So it would be a dual use in that case.
And all the expansion will be done.
Yeah. And employees, right.
All expansion will be done on county-owned property?
As currently planned. Yeah, the one site where we're considering trying to set a partnership of some type is at the Shokan Station trailhead for the Shokan Rail Trail, which is
owned by a municipality, though.
It's owned by the DEP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, none of these will be on private land. Yeah.
It is getting late, so
I'm
going to ask if we could call the question. Or go ahead.
I'm feeling more comfortable after your explanation of the 80% expectation. It's all going on county property.
Mm-hmm.
I might. How much would it hurt this effort if we postponed a month to explore it a little bit more?
We would need to. We're paying our networking fees on a year-to-year basis, so when 2023 comes around, we'll have networking fees to pay for that subscription year. So that's the looming deadline.
So if we passed in December, it would be. We'd still be on time, in other words. Okay, I move we postpone.
I'll second a postponement vote.
But I'll ask this. What do you hope to achieve, and what do you hope to get from Nick information-wise, and what do you think, even if you think there's something you might want to change, even if it's general, what you give me right now?
Yeah, I mean, I just got this new information about the county site. I mean, I'm much more supportive of that but I like your idea also of the, like, replacing fossil fuel filling stations with, like, incentivizing that. So, I don't know, maybe and I apologize, I did not closely read all the backup for this, I admit that, but maybe like a general, where are we going with these from the department's point of view?
We have a capital project description for the established capital project that this will be supporting, and that has sites identified in it with estimated numbers of stations. So I can provide that.
Okay. I second the postponement.
All in favor of postponing? I am not.
I would vote against that.
Kurt?
I am not in favor of postponing.
Okay. The motion to postpone carries, I do want to ask that we separate the EV system from the transportation system. I am extremely supportive of what has been done and is going on around UCAT and the transportation system, but one thing is, I will definitely be voting no if I don't have a working charge card. Charge point. Anyway, it's late and we're keeping people late. We still have, I think, one more resolution.
That was the last one. 547 was the last resolution on the agenda.
547?
Yeah, that you just postponed.
Okay, and that has been postponed, and then this is just for discussion?
Yeah, Legislator Erner just stepped out, but this is his proposed local law.
I wonder if we could, given the hour, postpone the discussion on this. How do
I
people...
I say, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, and these are important conversations. I don't want to cut them off, but I think we need to start fresh. Thank you, Dennis.
Surface time.
School comes early. I don't want to ask for a motion to adjourn until Legislator Erner gets back, but let me just double check the new business. I think we covered. Oh, yeah. I am going to postpone that. I don't think that was urgent. But I want to call to your attention, I have that on my notes too, that Liz Elkin sent around asking for support. And I have a question. Can a committee support something that is not a resolution for the whole legislature?
We
don't necessarily have to have that answer right now.
I don't see why not.
Yeah. We could do a letter of support or
okay.
It's kind of an official document that can
draw
some attention.
So what?
We could also do a memorializing letter.
Yeah.
I don't invite the whole legislature, but you could just send one to your committee.
Yeah, and it's to get what's the place in Sullivan County? What is it? Bethel Woods is to get that facility to allow people to refill water bottles because
they can't refill water bottles out of like a water fountain or what? Where would they?
Plastic bottles.
They sell a lot of plastic bottles.
So, oh, they don't even let you in with what? What are we asking that they do?
They don't let people bring their own water bottles.
Okay.
Where is
this? Bethel Woods, which is where the original Woodstock was.
Right.
But it's not in Ulster
County.
County,
though.
It's no, that's not in our
county. Well, then
but
we have
part of
no
that
business
one
talking
bring
about
in
that.
Vodka and other things as well. They're sneaking, you know, they'll say it's water, and it's kind of tough when you've got thousands of people
that's
pouring
true.
In.
Good point.
And you're letting everyone hold these containers.
All right.
So it's,
I mean, the movie theater doesn't let you bring in a bottle of water.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not Ulster County.
And you can
so.
Conceal it. I mean, I sneak water in the concerts.
All right. If we want to consider this next time, we can when you've had some more chance to look at it. And Legislator Erner, I would like to postpone your new resolution for the local law, because I think that's going to be a long discussion, and it is really late if you're okay with that. I didn't want to do it while you were out of the room, but...
Thank you.
Make a suggestion?
Yes,
sometimes
please.
Sometimes when we line up these meetings back to back, I almost would rather choose a different day and start earlier.
Yeah.
And that would allow us to have these marathons that I think a lot of times we get a lot out of. But, you know, I'm ready to go into, like, sugar shock or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Gina's been here since, like, 5.
And,
yeah,
and it's me that does back-to-back.
Been
and here since 9. I mean, sometimes that's nice.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
But I'm okay with that.
And then you guys are even kind of rushing sometimes knowing that you got somebody following.
So I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't mind coming up again.
Yeah.
And also, that's why I asked that we do a separate thing on the watershed, you know, rather than if,
yeah, and if we could start at like 5.
And don't ever put another meeting behind us.
Never ever.
And therefore, there's no executive.
Thank you all.
Yeah, because it would be breakfast.
Oh, yeah, he wanted to speak about his.
Yes. Go ahead.
So you're asking about I'm talking about this later. I can respect that it is late, and yes, let's please talk about it next time.
And we'll move it earlier on the agenda.
Yeah, and we'll have, from here on out, let's make sure we can go as long as we want without it being freaking 9:30.
And did you say what about the other old business items? What's happening with those?
We just wait.
Wait a minute.
Everything.
Okay.
So, do all of the committee members want to change the date and time of this meeting, or have an additional meeting?
No, change. I would say not additional, but change it earlier to another night that works for us. Do you guys agree?
Does 5 o'clock on? Oh, there's a meeting before us.
Yeah.
Could we meet in a different location?
No, because you have the same legislator on both committees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the legislators need to be able to attend both committees.
Right. So, but you can look at the whole schedule and see if there's anything that works.
What if they started at 6 and we started at 3?
I'm in school.
Oh.
Sorry.
we can talk to the clerk to see if there's another night.
Let's try to do that.
We can offer you whatever.
Friday night energy.
No. I say no.
Monday. There's a Monday that doesn't have a meeting right now. I think.
No, we have trails on Mondays.
That's true. There's trails on Mondays.
Not before.
All right. I'm going to
the first meeting of the committee.
Right. That's true.
And then there's.
Well, we don't need to.
The following Monday is public works.
Yeah, but it can line up with the chair meeting. That's a pretend thing. It's made up. No, I mean, we can just...
I'm not sure the chair.
Actually, I sat in on chairs once when she wasn't there. I got a lot out of chairs meeting.
Chairs meetings are great.
Well, that was good for you, because
it was
I had
good
no idea what went on that day.
It was good for me. I only went because Manna couldn't go, and I was like, I really liked it. It was very enlightening.
What we've done is created an executive committee inside the legislature. We're all duly elected, independent contractors that should have the same access to the same information. No other county has a chair meeting. It is absurd. It really is absurd.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes. Aye.
Any opposed? Meeting adjourned.
I will.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, and then goodness. Who's going to get back to us?